How many times have you heard the phrase, the three credit reporting bureaus, on this program and elsewhere? But did you know there are at least 10 of them? That's right, 10, all monitoring your transactions. It's true, and odds are you've never heard of most of them, but they know all about you. Today, Kingdom Advisors President Rob West reveals all kinds of credit bureaus keeping tabs on you. Then it's your calls at 800-525-7000, 800-525-7000. I'm Steve Moore. Little-known credit bureaus, that's next right here on MoneyWise Live. All right, Rob, so right off the bat, I have to ask, why in the world do we need 10 or more credit bureaus?
Fair question. And I think the answer is that most of them try to cater to different lender needs. The big three, as most people call them, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, are general in nature. They monitor how you handle transactions for credit cards and mortgages, perhaps an auto loan, that sort of thing. The others are what we might call boutique bureaus with a highly specific client base. And they look at other areas of your day-to-day transactions. And of course, many of them use different formulas and scoring ranges to determine your credit worthiness.
Okay. So I guess having three just wasn't complicated enough.
Right.
All right. So we have a long list here. I guess we'd better get to it. What's first?
Well, that would be SageStream. It recently received some publicity when an individual in North Carolina with a FICO score around 800 was turned down for a car loan. FICO-wise, that's an extremely high score, yeah. But that person's SageStream score was in the 600s.
And what would be the issue there?
Yeah, for one thing, SageStream uses a different scoring range from 0 to 999 as opposed to FICO's 300 to 850. But also, in addition to monitoring credit card and auto loan transactions, SageStream looks at your cell phone and internet service transactions. Perhaps you didn't even know those were monitored, did
no.
you?
No, I did not. All right, well, that's good to know. All right, what's next?
Well, let's look at a couple of them, Chex Systems and Certegy Check Services. As you might guess from their names, well, they monitor your checking account. The big three don't report overdrafts unless they go to a collection agency, so banks use Chex Systems and Certegy to see if you're an overdraft risk and whether they should let you open a checking account.
Didn't know that either. All right. What else?
Well, Innovis is sometimes called the fourth credit bureau because it collects similar information to the big three. But Innovis also reports on things like rent payments, utility bills, and even magazine subscriptions, if anybody has those anymore. Clarity Services is another. It's owned by Experian, but focuses on individuals and businesses looking for alternative financing, otherwise known as the subprime market. Things like payday loans, which, by the way, as a side note, are horrible and you should never apply for one, and other check cashing services as well. Another similar boutique bureau, Steve, is Teletrack, which reports to subprime credit card issuers, rent-to-own businesses, and furniture stores. Again, more places where you don't want to apply for credit.
Okay. And by the clock, I see we have time for at least one more. So what's our 10th credit bureau? And it's probably another one we've not heard of, right?
Well, that would be Credco. And of all 10 credit bureaus we've named, it might be the one that has the most impact on your FICO score because it combines all of your transactions from the big three into one report. So very little is missed. Credco looks at property ownership, loan obligations, legal filings, including liens and judgments, rental applications, collection accounts, even whether you're up to date on child support, interestingly.
Wow. Okay. So now, are all these other entities owned by FICO, or are they privately owned, but they all report in some way to FICO? Do you know?
Not owned by FICO. Separate corporations and entities, for sure.
But they all have, interestingly, they all have information about me and you, and yet we've never signed anywhere giving those people information or giving them permission to get this information.
That's right. Crazy. That's the world we live in.
Next, you're going to tell me the IRS knows all about me, and then where would I be? All right. So is there anything to really worry about? Maybe some of our listeners are as worried as I kind of am.
Yeah, no. Hopefully we haven't caused them to worry. And if you're running a tight ship financially, don't worry about anything, because this is just an accurate reflection of the way you manage money. So as long as you pay your bills on the time and keep your credit balances low, certainly below 30% of the limit, or better yet, no balances at all, you don't have to worry about credit bureaus accurately reporting your information, no matter what their name is.
Buying a home is the largest, most nerve-wracking purchase most of us ever make. It doesn't help that you're entering a maze of unfamiliar words and confusing options that can leave you intimidated, frustrated, and afraid you've been taken advantage of. Navigating the Mortgage Maze by Dale Vermillion helps you clear up the confusion, unrack your nerves, and make the best mortgage decisions possible with confidence. Navigating the Mortgage Maze, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
For 30 years, Sound Mind Investing has been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including a short video webinar on profit and peace of mind no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Do you remember that old ad from the 1970s for Clayton's? It's the drink you have when you're not having a drink. Hi, I'm Bernie Diamond. Clayton's has become part of our language. A Clayton's drink looks as though it's alcoholic, but really it isn't. A Clayton's anything is something that looks real, but isn't. Question: is it possible to have a Clayton's person? You know, a person who's not really a person. A baby in its mother's womb, is that a Clayton's person? Or maybe the street people we walk around on the footpath. They're almost always smelly. Are they Clayton's people? Or maybe those workers in the factories across Asia who make the toys our kids play with and the clothes we wear, all for a few cents an hour. Are they Clayton's people? Jesus said, "I've come to bring good news to the poor and to set the captives free." I wonder, when he looks around, whether he sees any Clayton's people on this earth. I wonder.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Hey, it's a real honor and a privilege to be with you today and for you to be with us. Here's our phone number if you have a question for Rob West on anything financial, 800-525-7000. Again, 800-525-7000. We were chatting just a bit about little-known credit bureaus. There are at least 10 of them, which probably means there are at least 12 or 13 of them in total. And if you're worried that some of these credit bureaus may not have accurate information, well, what do you do in that case, Rob?
Yeah, it's a good question. And you can request your credit reports from these bureaus and challenge incorrect reporting. Let me back up and explain. I would always be pulling regularly copies of your credit report. Best way to do that is a website, annualcreditreport.com. Absolutely free of charge, and you can pull those. I'd do that at least quarterly from each of the three bureaus. Now, if you were to spot something that is inaccurate from one of those bureau reports, the Fair Credit Reporting Act is what gives you the authority to challenge that information directly with that bureau. You can do it online or over the phone. Online is going to be easiest. And basically, you would just say to them and indicate which line items on that report are inaccurate or you don't recognize. According to the Act, they have 30 days with which to either verify that it's true and provide documentation as such, or delete it, and they'll notify you in either case. So I would be checking that information. Credit reports do, from time to time, have inaccurate information, and so by challenging it, you'll have it removed, and it will no longer be factored in
2-year credit score. That's something you just need to do as a part of your normal course of business.
Okay, great information. And again, we can talk about this or we can talk about anything that might be going on in your life from a financial perspective if you'll give us a call first, 800-525-7000. Rob, let's go out to Iowa. And Lori, nice to have you with us today. What's on your mind?
Yes, we have an HSA because we're self-employed farmers, and it's only collecting 1.74% interest at our local bank. And a doctor recently told me that he has an HSA, but he doesn't have it at his local bank. He is investing that money in I'm not sure if it's in the stock market or what he's doing, but I'm wondering, is that an option for us? And if so, what do you guys suggest we put it in so that I can, like, take money out of it once a year when we pay ourselves back for medical expenses?
Yeah. Well, it's a great question, Lori. And you're right. Some HSA accounts let you invest in mutual funds, ETFs, or even individual stocks. You can build your portfolio yourself, or you could use one of the more autopilot type approaches, sometimes called robo advisors, where it's invested based on answers you provide and information about your particular situation, goals, objectives, risk tolerance, that type of thing. And then it's invested for you. The nice thing is the gains are not taxable if they're used for qualified medical expenses. I would just try to figure out how much you plan to use in any given period. Now, one of the beauties of the HSA is if you're relatively healthy and you can max out your contributions, then you can build up a balance that carries over from year to year. And that ends up becoming a supplement to your retirement because you can invest it. Now, money that's going to just wash through the HSA in a given year, you probably don't want to invest because you may see that dip down. Plus, many of them require a minimum balance, in some cases, $1,000 to $2,000. But if you've built up potentially, you know, a couple of years or more worth of out-of-pocket healthcare expenses, then I think it's a good thing to consider beginning to put that money to work for you. And it may mean that you need, Lori, to transfer this HSA to another HSA custodian, one that has a little bit more flexibility. You could do some research online. I know HSA Bank is one that's really committed to this space, but a number of the discount brokerage houses have HSA options as well, Charles Schwab and Fidelity and others, and they would have all of the low-cost investment options you'd be looking for. I'm not surprised that a local bank does not give you as many of those options. So I'd probably first consider, is it appropriate to invest some portion of it, and if so, how much? And then secondly, begin looking at the various custodians out there and find the one that's the best for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
God bless, Lori. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. 800-525-7000. Still have some open lines. Stone Mountain, Georgia, not too far from either of us today, or on any day, actually. Vasant, thank you, sir, for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you all? Thanks for taking my call. Actually, I've been waiting for a long time. The reason I call, I'm 65 years old, and then I do get a social for about $1,300 a month I do get. Out of that, I do pay my mortgage, and remaining I have been tied with five or six things like veterans and Boys Town and other things. Mm. And remaining, I manage my home since my wife passed away. And I do have a large home with 5 acres. But the question is that I'm getting unable to maintain this house, and I got a mortgage around about $82,000, yes, left over. And then I do have a saving about $100,000 in the bank, I think. And that's it. So I'm a little confused about it and unable to manage the home right now. I mean, it's a gardening and other things. And the traffic is becoming hectic in this place. And so I want to get away from here. Maybe a year later I might put in the market and get some money out of this. And that would be my retirement money probably. So should I pay the amount or not?
Yeah. You know, I think the thing here is, first of all, we need to look at how much you have in the way of free cash reserves, because I wouldn't want you to spend that down too much. So I think that's the first question. What do you have saved up in liquid cash, Vasant?
Liquid cash is around about $4,000 in the checking, saving. And the checking is already $500 or $600. And the main amount is about $98,000 or $96,000. And I keep hearing about SMI from your guys, and I try to approach them. They advised me something else, then I backed up. And the banks were not giving much interest at all.
Okay. So you said you have about $90,000 or $100,000, and where is that? That's just in the bank or in a brokerage account?
Actually, it's saving $95,000, I think, probably. Yes.
Okay, very good. And in terms of the income that you have and your current expenses, are you able to live on Social Security alone?
Yeah, that's the greatest thing in me, the way I'm doing it. With that, I've been paying a little tight for the Boys Town schools and some Indian school and some Christian school too. As well as I've been paying for veterans for little things. And remaining, I do never go to restaurants or anything else. I do cook my own food.
Yeah, and, okay. Very good.
So that, yeah.
And now tell me a little bit more about the house. You say you really plan to move because it's more home than you need or want?
Yeah, actually, I don't need this big home. In fact, since she passed away, we lived here for 25 years, actually.
Yeah.
And it's 5.5 acres. Now the market is picking up, but maybe for a year later, I was thinking to go to a Christian city here in Georgia, right near Riverdale. So there's a retirees. It's very economic home, and I can do some volunteer things to still am active.
All right. So how much equity do you think you'd be able to pull out of the house when you sell? How much would you?
There were some people calling for $399 or something else, but right now that is low, in fact, and I should wait for a little while. People are saying get about $450 or something else.
All right, and how much do you owe on the current first mortgage?
$80,000.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. You know, I think at this point I would keep that cash there. I think you need to decide how much you want to keep liquid, you know, somewhere probably around 6 months. If you'd be more comfortable, you could go as much as a year's worth of expenses, given that you're in retirement, in a liquid account, or if not in cash or in the form of a savings account, perhaps in, you know, some treasuries or some high quality bonds that could be generate just a bit more than the high yield interest, but still very, very conservative. And then the rest, I think, could be invested. I think you have an opportunity here because you're looking to sell the house. I don't think I'd wait. I mean, we've been on the upswing of a really strong housing market, especially in Georgia, for the last decade. And to wait and think that this might go up another $50,000 in a short period of time when you've already decided it's too much home and you're ready to move on, I don't think is the best option. So I'd go ahead and engage a realtor, begin to figure out who is the best person to come alongside you, somebody who specializes in your area that could help you put this on the market, get it sold, and then you could buy something smaller, more manageable for cash, be completely out of debt, which would further reduce your income needs, and then you'd be sitting on that 6 months to 12 months worth of cash in CDs or high-yield savings, probably, maybe some treasuries. And then the rest put to work in the market. You could build a stock and bond portfolio that has a goal of maybe 4 to 6%. Let it continue to grow, and that's money that you could give away. Or if you had a major medical expense down the road, you could use that as well. So I think that's the plan I would plot out from here. Be sure to pray about it, Vasant, and then proceed accordingly.
And thank you very much for calling. We wish you the best. Have a great day, Vasant. And don't forget, here's our phone number, 800-525-7000. Give us a call now.
Most couples can't talk about money, yet most money books expect them to. But how can you create a budget or pay down debt if you can't even talk about spending or saving with your mate? If you get tense about money or just plain avoid money conversations altogether, Thriving in Love and Money by Shanti and Jeff Feldhahn is for you. And it's yours free when you donate $25 or more to MoneyWiseLive.org. Thriving in Love and Money for a better relationship, not just a better budget.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
Believe with my heart, confess with my mouth. It's got to be more than in my head. It has got to make it down in my heart. I want you to jot this down for a minute. Let's think through this whole thing about confessing with our mouth. Because what I want to say to you is it can take place in all sorts of different ways. It can take place in a public kind of religious meeting. It can take place at an invitation. It can take place before a baptism. But it also means something that takes place when we simply profess that to people. When we are openly believers in Christ and we make that confession, it's that it does come out of our mouths. The imperative that it does come out of our mouths and that we have that opportunity to confess it. I want you to jot down, true inward conviction brings outward confession. It just is going to happen every time. There's no way to be, biblically speaking, from a New Testament point of view, there is no way to be saved and never tell it and no one ever know it. But what the New Testament says to us over and over again is that actually, when something is that much a part of your belief system and actually the core of your entire believing being, there's no way to do that. There's just no way to do that. If we can keep it that much to ourselves, something's wrong. Something's wrong.
You've been listening to Beth Moore with a quick word. We have two ways to experience Now That Faith Has Come, a study of Galatians. The online experience is now available at bethmoore.org. The workbook edition will release in January 2021. Either way, Beth would love to have you in Bible study.
Your family and your money are two very important subjects. That's why in this month's MoneyWise e-magazine, we're giving your family tips and tools to grow closer to God, closer together, and closer to true financial freedom. Get practical advice to strengthen financial communication in your marriage, infuse more budget-friendly family activities into your week, and a lot more. Your free MoneyWise e-magazine subscription is waiting for you at moneywise.org/signup.
Good to have you aboard today. It's MoneyWise Live, finding God's wisdom for your finances. Let's continue on. Akron, Ohio. Hey, Warren, thank you for calling today, sir. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've never invested in the stock market, and family and friends are telling me that this is a good time to be in the stock market or get into the stock market. So I had heard about some apps, like I think one of them is called Robinhood, where they take the change or the from a purchase and round it up and that's what they invest for you. Mm-hmm. I guess it's not very much, but so when I tried to figure out if that was a good thing to do, some people on the internet say, yeah, it's great, it works fine, I love it, and then other people are like, this is stupid. You should only invest if you know what you're doing. And this one guy gave this whole list of books and stuff to read, which is probably why I've never got into the stock market.
Sure.
But I just wanted to know, you know, is this a good entry point for like a novice, or is this like a waste of time and money?
Yeah, it absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And I would say any point is a good entry point, Warren, because the key to investing is not trying to pick the time to enter or exit. The key to investing is just being systematic. So you want to get the right kind of account open. And if it's money that is going to be long term in nature, meaning you're thinking retirement, you know, 20 or 30 years down the road, depending on your age, and you just want to put money away that you can build up over time, that's great. Then you'd open a retirement account, starting with a 401k if your job has matching. And if not, then I'd look at an IRA, or if you're self-employed, there's some other options. But the key is you want to get the right kind of account open. And the reason we typically think in terms of retirement is, you know, when we're investing, we want to make sure we have at least a 10-year time horizon so that we can weather the ups and the downs of the market. So you don't have to know whether this is the top or the bottom. Is the market going to be higher 6 months from now than it is today? Nobody knows. And if they try to tell you they do, then they're not being truthful. But it doesn't matter where it's going to be in 6 months, because we know that if we're looking 10 years out, the market, at least historically speaking, has always done well. It's been the very best place to build wealth over time. So once you decide on the type of account, then you have to choose the investments. And if you're just getting started, using one of these online robo solutions can be a great thing. You know, these are fairly new, but they're very low cost. And the key is they're very highly diversified. So if you use something like Betterment or the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios or something like that, you'd open an account, could be a retirement account or a taxable account. But again, make sure you have the right time horizon. And then you'd begin systematically investing. Let's say you can carve out $250 a month, or, you know, I don't know what you're thinking, but a meaningful amount. And based on the questions that you answer going into it when you set it up, it would automatically, using the algorithms, you know, behind it, build a portfolio using something called an exchange-traded fund, which is essentially a basket of investments, and it's going to mirror the broad moves of the market, not one particular high-flying stock, but the broad market in various sectors, international and domestic, and small cap, meaning smaller companies, and large cap, meaning the large capitalization companies, in different sectors, technology and financial and healthcare and the like. And you'll have a nice cross-section of the market. And by systematically investing, you're going to do something called dollar cost averaging, which means you're buying in at different entry points. Some are higher, some are lower. And when the market's down, you're buying more shares with the same amount of money. But then fast forward 10 or 20 or even 30 years, and if you do this faithfully, you'll have a significant amount of money that you could use to supplement your Social Security, do some other giving, maybe even use as an income source. So I think that's the big idea. Now, something like Acorns for somebody who's just starting out, and that's what you're talking about when you talked about the rounding up. It's called Acorns. It's fine. You're not going to build up a lot of money there, but it's a nice way to kind of back into some forced savings without really missing the money. But really, the way you want to do investing is in a meaningful way with a long-term strategy. So let's do this. You mentioned a book. I've got one for you. It's called The Sound Mind Investing Handbook. If you stay on the line, we'll send one to you as our gift.
Just what you needed, Warren. Something else to read, buddy. It's on the way. Thanks for your call today. 800-525-7000. You're listening to MoneyWise Live.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
Hi, my name is Martha, a communications major at the Moody Bible Institute. The Moody Radio Verse of the Week is found in Ezekiel 36, 26 through 27. I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. That's Ezekiel 36, 26 through 27, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
Every child needs these four gifts from their dad: relationship, integrity, teaching, and experience. I'm Drew Dick, host of Moody Publishers' Reading for a Change podcast. Brian Loritz just released a new book, The Dad Difference. Brian illustrates the importance of a father's role in their children's life by methodically walking you through the process of putting these four gifts into practice. Get your copy of The Dad Difference available now at moodypublishers.com. That's moodypublishers.com.
Many people are experiencing financial challenges, such as credit card debt, downsizing, dead-end jobs, and depleted savings. In fact, more than half of all divorces are the result of financial pressures at home. But there's hope. In Your Money Counts, biblical financial expert Howard Dayton shows that the Bible is a veritable blueprint for managing your finances, and you'll discover the profound impact it has on your relationship with God. Your Money Counts is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. At the White House earlier today, President Trump presided over a couple of historic diplomatic agreements between Israel and two Gulf Arab nations. The landmark agreements will formalize Israel's warming relations with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. Forecasters say Hurricane Sally could dump flooding rains on a path from Mississippi to the Carolinas this week. That's after the storm makes landfall on the Gulf Coast. The National Weather Service says up to 8 inches could fall later this week across parts of Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and the Carolinas, after Sally comes ashore near the Mississippi-Alabama state line. U.S. industrial production slowed to a modest 0.4% increase in August, far below the strong rebounds in recent months. Stocks finishing higher today, the Dow gained 2 points, the Nasdaq up 133, and the S&P 500 was up 1. This is SRN News.
Hey, if you'd like to know more about who we are and what we do, you'll find it when you visit our website, moneywiselive.org. Lots of great resources there that you can avail yourselves of. There is our bookstore, ways to contact a certified Kingdom advisor. In fact, speaking of that, Rob, we had a caller just a few minutes ago who had to hang up, and they wanted to know how to become a certified Kingdom advisor. I think that caller was Tom. Could you maybe review some of those points?
Yeah, I think Tom was looking for one, but I'll mention both. If you want to become a certified Kingdom advisor, there are significant experience requirements, 10 years of experience, or one of the what we call the Big C designations. You have to either be a CFP or a CPA, a CFA, one of those. There's character requirements, pastor and client references, statement of faith, code of ethics, and a 50-hour university certificate course and a proctored exam learning all these biblical principles. So we'd love to invite you to explore that at kingdomadvisors.com. Now, if you're somebody who just wants to align your values with your professional financial advice, whether that's financial planning, investments, insurance, taxes, you name it, you can search for a certified Kingdom advisor in your city. There's 1,500 of them around the country and up into Canada. You just go to moneywiselive.org and click the button that says Find a CKA. You can put in your zip code. You'll get a list in your area, and I would interview at least three.
All right. Great information. Thanks, Rob. Deerfield Beach, Florida. Hello, Ann. What's your question today for Rob?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an RMD question.
Right.
I had heard that we don't have to take RMDs out this year. Is that true?
It is true, actually, Ann, and I appreciate so much the call. Yeah, with the CARES Act, RMDs for 2020 have been suspended. The IRS now says that anyone who took an RMD from an IRA or a 401k in 2020 can repay the withdrawn funds, even if the withdrawal was in January. The repayment will be treated as a tax-free rollover, but isn't subject to the one rollover every 12-month rule. But the bottom line is, you're exactly right, the CARES Act does suspend that for this year only.
Now, I'm curious, though, is that for all RMDs, even if it's not someone who's just starting with one?
Yes, it is. Yep. Anybody,
okay,
whether you've been taking them for a while or not, because
right,
of the COVID situation, they were suspended for the year 2020.
Okay, good. I do have another quick question, if I may.
Sure.
Okay. As far as our investments, we had ours with a financial advisor, and her company changed to another company, and our account was switched to a different company, not with the same advisor. At this point, we don't have a financial advisor, but they're acting as though it's a law that we have to have a financial advisor in order to keep our account with the company that's holding our IRAs.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it may be an internal policy for them to have somebody on record with that account. But the bottom line is you have complete discretion over how this money is managed, whether or not you use an advisor, and you most certainly can handle any investment account yourself if you choose to do that. You just may need to move it to another custodian. So what you would want to do, Anne, is perhaps look at transferring this IRA to another institution that better matches how you want it handled moving forward. If there's an advisor with this particular company that you can develop a rapport with and you think is a good fit, then that's fine. But if not, I'd begin interviewing other advisors, perhaps there in the Deerfield Beach area, that would be a good fit for you. And once you select one, you could just simply transfer that IRA from the current custodian to the custodian of this new investment professional who could then take over. Or you'd always have the opportunity to transfer it to a custodian on what they call the retail side, where you could actually manage it yourself if that was something you so choose. So I would definitely look into that. And as we mentioned to Tom just a moment ago, I'd encourage you to consider an investment professional who shares your values and can really give you biblical advice alongside the professional counsel that you need. And you could find more than one right there in South Florida, Certified Kingdom Advisors, when you go to our website, moneywiselive.org. Just click Find a CKA.
And God bless you, and thank you so much for calling. Let's say hi to Bonnie, calling from Wilmette, Illinois. And Bonnie, you're on MoneyWise Live.
Oh, hi. Thanks.
Yes.
Yes. My mother believes she's inherited, or she's a beneficiary of a timeshare from her boyfriend. So she lived with her boyfriend. He died. And I talked with her today. She said she signed something. And they're still sending the maintenance bills to him, and she gets them through the mail because she lives in his old house. And I'm just trying to help her. My mom is elderly, and that's why she's not quite sure what she signed. She can't find the information. And so my question to you is, do you know of a legitimate, I guess they call it exiting an unwanted timeshare? I guess it's not an easy process, but one that's reputable?
Yeah. Well, it can be difficult. I think the first thing, Bonnie, is just to make sure she does, in fact, need to take this over. Because here's the thing. Now, we don't know what she's signed, but if she hasn't signed anything, the good news is no one has to inherit an unwanted timeshare. You know, if the timeshare is the right to use type, the heirs would direct the executor to inform the resort owner that the owner of the timeshare has passed away, and they would provide the steps to take back the timeshare. Now, in your case, it sounds like the resort is already aware of the owner's passing. If it has a real estate deed or there's a specific bequest in the owner's will, then your mother would file a written disclaimer of interest with the probate court handling the estate. The resort can't force your mother to take over the timeshare. But again, you'd have to understand exactly what she's already agreed to, and you wouldn't want to assign anything. You'd probably want to have an estate attorney look into this for you and help you navigate this. But I would prefer, unless she wants it, that she just not even accept it. But in the event she's already taken it over legally, then, you know, there are ways to get out of it. But you're right, it's not easy. There are some companies out there. There's not any that I have vetted enough to be able to recommend to you. But what I will say is there are some user groups out there, for instance, TUG2, the Timeshare Users Group, that's TUG and the number 2.com, would be a great way to explore other people who would be willing to buy it. You could approach the company, see if they'd be willing to take it back. You can also put it in a local newspaper in that area and try to sell it that way. But the timeshare users group would be a great next step for you. But I would also engage the estate attorney who handled the probate on this particular person's estate to see if, in fact, your mom does have legal right to this and is required to take it over.
Mm. But, Rob, unless her mom is really excited about taking possession of this, the best option probably to try to not take possession.
Absolutely.
And definitely do all the paperwork. Yeah. Bonnie, I hope that helps you, and I hope you can help your mom further with this. Thank you very much. Great question today. And if you're pondering whether to get into a timeshare yourself for the first time, ponder that at length. Speak to a few people. We get more than a few people who call us on a regular basis asking how to get out from under one. You're listening to MoneyWise Live. Your host is Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Back with more after this.
Many people adopt an attitude toward marriage and finances that it'll all work out somehow. But sadly, it often doesn't. Financial woes can devastate a marriage, but there is a better way. God's Way. Money and Marriage God's Way by Howard Dayton will help you discover God's approach to growing your finances, strengthening your relationship with your mate, and cultivating godly joy. Money and Marriage God's Way is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm here to help you understand how urgent and how fun it is to share your faith at every opportunity through the eyes of a layman. All of us have people we don't want to be with. Their views are different, their attitude is negative, they're critical of you, and they're the smartest person in the room. And you're supposed to love them and lead them to Jesus? Well, actually, it's not that hard when you make sport out of it. Everyone has a soft spot, and the Holy Spirit will help you find it. Ignore the rhetoric and start asking questions and showing interest in them, and you'll be amazed how fast you'll start understanding the hurt that's making them hurt. It's actually fun. And when they bash you even more, just laugh to yourself and tell God, hey, I need some extra help. He'll give it to you. God will reward you when you're bashed for him. And when you finally turn that person to a friend, you'll know what a miracle looks like. There is nothing more exciting than knowing God is using you to move people closer to him. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
Hi, I'm John Erickson Tata. And not long ago, my husband Ken took fresh baked cookies to people up and down our street. It's his way of, quote, hurrying God's promise. The promise talked about in 2 Peter, where it says, we're looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness. Friend, we can help hurry on that promise of an eternal home of righteousness by showcasing that righteousness to others, what it looks like when we live God's way, the same way we will live in the new heaven and the new earth. So let's show people what a home of righteousness is like. Let's pave the way for our Savior by showering others with thoughtfulness, good deeds, and right living. Let's speak good of Christ to our neighbors and friends. How about with a plate of cookies? Really? Well, hey, let's do whatever we can to hurry on God's promises today. I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
Many people adopt an attitude toward marriage and finances that it'll all work out somehow, but sadly, it often doesn't. Financial woes can devastate a marriage, but there is a better way. God's Way. Money and Marriage God's Way by Howard Dayton will help you discover God's approach to growing your finances, strengthening your relationship with your mate, and cultivating godly joy. Money and Marriage God's Way is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
From the book of Luke, Luke 16, verse 12, and if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? Let's go to our phone lines. Lakeland, Florida. Jose, we appreciate your patience, my friend. What's your question?
Yes, I'm just trying to get more of a biblical principle on tithing. Reason being is I still tithe. I've been tithing for the past 2 years. But I came across a Netflix show, and it kind of highlighted churches that that use basically the prosperity gospel, and that's why I left my church, and it kind of tarnished and left a bad impression on me on tithing. And I'm kind of borderline on the fence of giving up tithing. And I really want to get a solid, I've been praying about it, and I just haven't got complete clarity on, should I be tithing, and is it something that's good and pleasing to God?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I appreciate so much this question. And I think, first of all, with regard to the prosperity gospel, I would agree with you. It is not biblical in the way most people talk about and explain the prosperity gospel. In fact, we just did a program on this recently. I'd love for you to go to our website, moneywiselive.org, and just search for prosperity gospel. And you can listen to the program that we did where we went into this in depth. And talked about how it's not in alignment with Scripture, but I think that's completely different from and separate from this idea that we should, as God's people, be generous. You remember the tithe preceded the law with Abraham and Melchizedek. We see clear example of giving to the Lord. You remember it's all His, the cattle on a thousand hills. It's all the Lord. So one of the big ideas as believers we need to recognize right out of the gate is that God owns it all, and we're the steward or the manager of God's resources. And we see that God Himself is incredibly generous. In fact, we're created in His image, and we're most like Him, I believe, when we're giving, because He's the ultimate giver. He gave us His Son, who paid the penalty for our sin, to reconcile us through His substitutionary death on the cross so that we could have a relationship and be restored into a right standing with the Father. So that's an incredible act of generosity. So when we take the Father's money to manage it, we should be generous ourselves. Now, what should that look like? How should we be generous? Well, we see clearly we should live with contentment. We should live within God's provision, and we should not consume all that we have. Remember, Proverbs says there's precious oil in the house of the wise. The foolish man swallows it up. And I think as we join God in giving, that then calibrates our hearts to His heart. So how should we give? Well, we see plenty of examples of that. We see the principle of the tithe clearly in the Old Testament, referenced in the New Testament by Jesus Himself, where we give a tenth, which is what the word means, to the storehouse. So I would say we start our giving with the local church. That was clearly God's plan A, and we see that kind of giving funding the work of the church in the early church in Acts, I think very plainly. So we give, not because we're checking a box, not because we're old under the law of Moses, not because we're being legalistic, but because we give out of an expression of obedience and an act of worship, and we give as God has prospered us. And we start with the local church. But then that's a beginning point, not an ending point. The author Randy Alcorn says our tithes should be the training wheels of giving, because then we start to give sacrificially beyond that. And my experience is when we experience the joy of giving, you're going to naturally want to reorder your finances so you can do even more. Now, you need to be giving to a Bible-believing church where God has planted you, that's teaching the Scriptures, of course. And so we give, to the Lord, but we give the tithe as the way to fund the church. Now, there are some people that say, well, we're not under the law anymore. Why are we still tithing? And clearly, I think we see in the New Testament where Jesus, in a sense, upped the standard, that we're to give proportionately, we're to give sacrificially and systematically. So I think for each of us, Jose, we need to come before the Lord and say, Lord, what would you have me to do? And establish an amount that we want to give. But I would say that amount should be increasing over time as we grow in our maturity and walk with the Lord. But I've thrown a lot at you there, and I'm not trying to tell you exactly what to do, because I think at the end of the day, it needs to be a conviction on your part. But what I would absolutely say is that as we look at the counsel of Scripture, we should be generous. We should be systematic in that. We should give proportionate to how God has blessed us. And I think the starting point for all of us should be our local church. But you give me your thoughts. What do you think?
No, just by hearing that, I'm already redirected, and I definitely feel humbled, because I was stepping back, like I said, but that definitely has humbled me, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I hope it has, and not that you hope it's humbled you, but I hope it's helped you appreciate God's heart in this area. Here's what I'd like to do, Jose. Stay on the line. I want to send you a copy of Howard Dayton's book, Your Money Counts, where he really unpacks God's heart and these principles related to his money and how we should manage it, including the area of giving, and hopefully that'll be a blessing to you as well. So stay on the line. We'll get your information. We appreciate your call today.
Yeah, God bless, Jose. Thank you very much. And remember, we don't give to get. We give because we already got. We got God's mercy and God's grace, and it's our way of saying thank you to him. Again, thank you for your call today. Miami, Florida. Hello, Mark. We have a little bit of time. Let's dig into this, okay?
All right. Thank you for answering my call. So I'll make it real quick. I'm living in a two-bedroom apartment. I'm paying $1,350. And now I have, like, getting my fifth child. I'm running out of space. So my question is, I was thinking about getting a house. Should I get just go ahead and try to get a house instead of paying a higher rent and getting a bigger place to rent, or just buy a house?
Well, congratulations on that growing family, bud. That's great. God is blessing you. But I think it's always got to come back to the plan, right? We've got to look at the spending plan. We've got to look at your finances and say, what is the right move for you so you don't put yourself in a position where you have unnecessary pressure on you for obligations and mortgages and things that you actually can't afford. So, yes, we want to make sure there's enough room for those sweet kids, but we want to do it in a way that's wise, that doesn't create problems down the road. And so here's the way we approach that. Number one, you need a spending plan or a budget. If you don't have a budget, I'd encourage you to download the MoneyWise app. If you just go to your app store, whichever you use, Google or Apple, you can download the MoneyWise app absolutely free and begin to put in your budget, because I want you to track everything you're spending, what's coming in, what's going out, fixed expenses, what I call discretionary expenses, things you don't get a bill for, even the non-recurring expenses, things that come around once a quarter or once a year. I want you to get everything in there so you know where your money's going. And then it's a matter of saying, okay, what can I afford? Well, as a rule of thumb, and that's all it is, I would encourage you not to allocate more than 25% of your take-home pay to a mortgage payment. That is principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, 25%. And so that's going to give you a number that says, okay, I can afford this payment. Now, you got to put that in line with everything else, but if you keep it at 25%, if there's not anything else that's just really out of line, it should work. And then once you feel like you've got a good handle on your budget, you know what the mortgage payment is, then you know how much you could take on. The next step is to make sure you save enough down payment. If you decide you're going to spend $200,000 for round numbers, I'd love for you to have 20% down. That means you got to save up $40,000, and that's a lot of money, and that's going to take some time. But that really should be your goal, because that's going to keep you out of private mortgage insurance, and it's going to make sure you'd never get upside down where the house declines in value and you can't sell it because you don't have enough equity. So if you save 20% and you don't spend more than 25% of your take-home pay on the mortgage payment, I think that's your goal. And hopefully all that really works in such a way that you say, okay, I'm ready. And then I'd find a realtor, somebody who can help you look for the neighborhood that fits kind of how much you have to spend, and then I'd proceed from there. But it's all got to start with that budget.
Mark, hope that helps you. We're glad you called today. Wish you the very best. Pierre, South Dakota. Bruce, a little bit of time left here. Let's jam it in, okay?
We'll make it work.
All right.
I'm 67, and I had a question about converting the traditional IRAs into a Roth. At 67, I've got a couple of things I'm looking at here. I've got from my federal employment, I have a thrift funds in a federal thrift savings,
yes.
And I have two traditional IRAs, and so I know there's a pay for doing the conversion, if you will. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on doing the cost effectiveness on to minimize the tax consequences at 72.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the key is the Roth really shines where you've got a long period of time to take and let this money grow on a tax-free basis because you pull it out tax-free, as you know.
Right.
And so obviously you're in, I would guess, a lower tax bracket right now than your peak earning years, and so that works to your benefit. But I guess I'm really asking, what are you gaining? And is there enough benefit of going ahead and realizing all that tax right now or over a couple of years? You know, obviously that would help you avoid the RMD moving forward. But I just don't think there's enough benefit at 72 to pay all this tax now. I'd probably just stick with what you have and use probably a qualified charitable distribution to get some of that money out in the form of giving and saving taxes that way.
Hmm. And Bruce, we're going to have to let it lie right there because we are out of time, which is why you hear music coming up there in the background. But we wish you the very best. If that doesn't do it for you, call back another time and we'll kick it around a bit more. Thank you very much. And thank you for listening today. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media, and you're a big part of that. My thanks to Amy, Dan, Clara, and Jim for their technical assistance and expertise. Have a great night. Join us again tomorrow.